It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A hunt of sorts is underway in Mount Lebanon. The goal is to control the deer population, which Mount Lebanon commissioners say is posing a danger to the community with an alarming number of incidents involving deer and automobiles. At issue, though, is the method being used to thin the herd. It's a program in which deer are led to traps with food and shot. The venison will be donated to local food banks. But opponents of this, and there are plenty of them, say it is inhumane and barbaric. Joining us now in Studio A is Layla Slayman. She's a representative of Pittsburgh Animal Rights. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, good afternoon.
And with us by phone, Tom Fazy, Information and Education Supervisor for the Pennsylvania Game Commission Southwest Region. The Game Commission issued the permit to Mount Lebanon to cull as many as 150 deer by March 31st. Tom Fazy, good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And joining us in Studio A as well is Post-Gazette reporter John Hayes, who has been covering this issue. John Hayes, welcome to the program.
Morning.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. Again, 412-246-2002. The email address esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Again, call with your comments and your questions at 412-246-2002. Folks already on the line, we will get to you momentarily. But John Hayes, let's start with you. You covered the Mount Lebanon Commissioner's meeting last night. You were also on hand for the start of this deer cull operation. What can you tell us about what took place?
Well, actually, Mike Fuca from the Post-Gazette was at the meeting. I was out in the field driving around looking for any disturbance or, you know, where the call was occurring. But there were a lot of people, dozens of people carrying signs protesting this call that had already been approved. It wasn't that there was actual discussion at the meeting about whether they should do this or not. It's already been determined they were doing it. This was just protests, continuing protests against it, and some people talking, supporting the call.
And Layla Slayman, you were at the meeting last night. People were, we were told, were afforded the opportunity to stand up and speak out against the hunt. Were you one of those that had an opportunity to do that? What were some of the things that were being said at the meeting last night?
I was at the meeting last night, and I've been at the last several commissioners' meetings in Mount Lebanon. And just like everything else that the commission has been doing, they did not allow non-residents to speak. So at the last minute, they decided to pull the sign-in sheet, and luckily there were, you know, at least 20-1 residents opposing the call, and they did stand up and speak out against it, and so that was very reassuring. The more and more that people hear about this plan, whether residents or non-residents or surrounding communities, people are concerned, and the more and more they find out about it, the less popular this is.
First of all, are you a resident of Mount Lebanon?
I'm not.
Why are you opposed to this? What are the things that you say people should know that they do not know?
Well, from its conception, it has not been transparent. And that's not the democratic system, and that's not what people that elected officials expect of those representing them. And that's really one of the largest issues here. So this doesn't have anything to do with public safety or how inhumane it is or anything else. This is about transparency in the government. And until people started finding out more about this plan, they didn't really know some of the specifics. When wildlife specialists in Merlin Benner started setting up their locations, they chose locations 250 feet from schools. Now, it's federal law that it needs to be 1,000. They need to be 1,000 feet from schools. How the commission and a wildlife specialist didn't know this is just beyond belief. And it's just been, you know, hurdle after hurdle after obstacle for him of things done wrong and the public safety not in mind. And so altogether, people are asking, where is the meat being donated to? It's going to be violating the permit if that doesn't happen. But we can't get a straight answer from where the meat is going. And I'll tell you why, Paul. It's because the meat's going to go to the landfill. We have confirmation from Hunter Sharing Harvest. I can pull up the email from Paul Ketterer, who does all the Paul Ketterer is a manager, and he coordinates everything. He's a coordinator. And he said as of March 2nd, he has not been contacted and hasn't heard about it. This permit was good starting February 1st. They could have started killing if the corrals were up. I would think that things would be in line prior to February 1st if this meat was going to be donated.
Okay, well, at this point, all we have is the word of the officials in Mount Lebanon who say that, in fact, the venison will be donated to local food banks. And you bring up certainly a concern.
They won't tell us where, though. They won't tell us where. It's not transparent.
Local food banks?
Folks asked at the meeting last night. We want a straight answer. They will not tell us where. It's because it's not, you know, it's not planned to go to food banks. It's absolute farce. This entire thing is a charade, and people expect more from their government.
Tom Fazy of the Pennsylvania Game Commission, there may or may not be a clear understanding by the public of exactly what is taking place here. Explain what the Game Commission is overseeing exactly in this situation.
Okay, the Game Commission's role as the state wildlife agency is to manage wildlife in the Commonwealth, and deer, of course, are one of those valued species. Our challenge within that is to minimize the negative effects that deer can pose socially and ecologically. As such, in these suburban and urban areas where these high populations, unnaturally high populations exist, we can't mandate how a community decides to manage their deer. We set the frameworks that can guide them and set parameters. The community can come up with a consensus amongst themselves and proceed in accordance with their stated goals. And that's what's been done here in Mount Lebanon. As far as the transparency goes, that was brought up. That's a Mount Lebanon issue. You know, that if my understanding is there was plenty of community meetings. This didn't just happen overnight. So our job is to set the parameters and guide them in their process and give them suggestions, which we've done over the last several months, and going back to last summer, over the course of several months. Mount Lebanon came up with a deer management plan that included several approaches, and they've requested through the permit process to use this method that they've selected.
Along the course of this plan coming together, was there any point at which the Game Commission looked at it and saw red flags, or was concerned about how this was proceeding and maybe stepped in to adjust one thing or another?
Yes, their initial applications were sent back for revision.
Why,
at least two occasions, from my recollection.
Can I ask why that was?
Well, they initially wanted to use contraception, and it's not approved for use in Pennsylvania, so that was denied. We wanted to set specific parameters on this approach that they ultimately decided upon, and that's what we did with the permit that was issued. They met the provisions of the law in all respects, and we are duty bound to issue the permit. Now, saying that, we're not totally washing our hands of responsibility here by any stretch. Our job is to monitor compliance with those provisions, including where that meat goes. We will know where that meat goes. If 1 pound of meat ends up in a landfill, we have the authority to revoke and suspend this permit immediately. So the specific place where that meat goes is really not a non-issue. Why should a reputable businessman or woman who owns a processing shop that Hunter Sharing the Harvest utilizes, why should they subject themselves to unnecessary attention and possible aggravation when all they're doing is providing a needed service for people who could use?
That's objective, Mr. Fazy, and also it's not a non-issue. This was sold to many residents and people against it based on the fact, oh, well, we're going to donate the meat to food banks. You know, let them eat cake, kind of elitist mentality, and that's not okay. We have proof showing you that Kip's processing. He told us he is not processing the deer meat. We don't have food banks. You know ahead of time that this has not been set up, so why are you going to wait until after to revoke this permit? It's a violation. We already know that. Unless they can show proof, we know that a violation is going to be conducted. Do I have to
wait until
my partner,
right,
you know?
Layla, let me jump in here. If the what you're saying, Tom Fazy, is that that you are going to take what the Mount Lebanon officials are saying here. You're taking their word on this, and you'll know if, in fact, they haven't followed through. I don't know that any of the deer have been shot yet, so there may not be any meat to be harvested at this point. So what you're saying is that you're taking them at their word, and if they do not follow through, you can step in and revoke the permit.
That's exactly right. It's not we don't have to dictate to them to tell us ahead of time what they're doing with the meat. The conditions of the permit are that it goes to hunters sharing the harvest. If that doesn't happen, they violated the conditions of the permit. Until that happens, we have no course to alter what's been written.
Something I want to clarify here. Have any deer been shot, John? They have.
Last night.
How many?
They won't say. They won't say how many or which call site.
There's the transparency again.
Another question that I wanted to ask again, Tom Fazy, is could you explain how this works exactly? And also, can you explain why contraception is not approved in Pennsylvania?
Well, if you want to, I'll deal with the fertility control first.
Okay.
Fertility control, there's two methods. Sterilization, which is actual surgical sterilization, either removing the ovaries or what's called tubal ligation. That's one method. And immunocontraception is a drug that is administered. You have to capture the animal. You have to hand inject it. You have to mark those animals with immunocontraception. Obviously, both of these methods are very high in cost, manpower, a lot of stress on the animal. On the contraception, it's dependent upon every individual deer's immune system's reaction to the drug. So, you know, if it has a negative reaction, you're going to have to recapture that animal the second year and readminister the drug if it doesn't work. Some it will work, some it won't work. So it sometimes requires re-injection of that drug. It only works. You can't administer it to any deer less than 1 year old. So any fawns in the population that are breeding in their first year, which can be up to 30%, in an urban population such as this, it's not going to work on them. And the bottom line is it doesn't solve the population that's on the ground now, and it doesn't really work very well in a free-ranging population. If you had a fenced-in property somewhere, this would work over time, possibly. But in a free-roaming population, the immunocontraception really doesn't. It's not a viable option. It's not. It's a controlled, a registered pesticide. It's nationally, the federal EPA regulates it as a restricted use pesticide, and it's not licensed or registered for use in the state of Pennsylvania. So you got a lot of things there,
right? And so the township has decided on a plan. The commission has approved and is overseeing it. And House, you know, I sort of in a very general way described it as using food to lure the deer into these controlled areas, and then they are shot. But that might be oversimplifying it. Are there other things we need to know about how this works?
Well, that's pretty much the way it's going to work. Our recommendation, you know, our folks and our agency recommended to Mount Lebanon to use sharpshooters. That's a very effective method. It works. It's working in several communities across the Commonwealth as we speak. It's cost effective, and it's humane and it's safe. It's been proven to be safe. Mount Lebanon chose not to do that. They chose this other method and contracted with wildlife specialists, and they've decided to use these corrals and bait them in. They have an automatic door that shuts. No more than 6 deer can be in the corral at one time. That's a condition of the permit. And they're going to shoot them from an elevated position, and we're going to see how this works. This is a novel approach. We're going to monitor compliance and make sure that it's being done right and safe and humanely. And if it, the bottom line here is, if our folks who are monitoring this feel that it's going south, it's not working right, we can revoke the permit immediately.
That's Tom Fazy. He's Information and Education Supervisor for the Pennsylvania Game Commission Southwest Region, joining us by phone. Also with us is Post-Gazette reporter John Hayes, who has been covering this issue, and Layla Slayman, representative of Pittsburgh Animal Rights. John Hayes, how many other places have a problem similar to what Mount Lebanon is experiencing, and how are they dealing with it?
Every place in eastern United States is having this problem. We've got to back up a little bit how we got here. Deer are a unique species in that they impact every other animal in the woods. Every deer eats about a ton of shoots and grasses and things every year. Every doe is sexually mature at 1 year. Virtually all of them get pregnant every year. They have 1 to 3 fawns per year. Half of them are does. So unchecked in an uncontrolled population where there's no predators and no control, they double their population every 2 years. Double. Time magazine ran a cover story a couple years ago about this problem. New York Times has written about it. Within the boroughs there, they have real severe deer problems. And the problem is the deer, sometimes it's urban sprawl moving into their areas, but deer are very adaptable. They don't care that they're in the city. They come into human areas.
Yes, we see that. I can say, living in the South Hills, that at night we see deer going into front and backyards and along the streets when they perceive that it's safe or there's nobody around.
Well, the problem in Mount Lebanon started about 10 years ago when they're called negative deer-human conflicts or contacts. If you look out the window and you see deer and you like it, that's a positive contact. If you see them and you don't like it, they're eating your bushes or they're running in front of your car, that's a negative contact. And negative deer-human contacts began in Mount Lebanon about 10 years ago. The numbers of police reports and traffic accidents began rising.
People say that it's about the traffic accidents, or at least that's what the township officials are saying is the reasoning behind this. But some are saying that it is as much, if not more, about some residents of Mount Lebanon being up in arms about the deer being in their yards, in their gardens.
Yeah, we're talking about negative deer-human contacts. In 2007 and 2008, Mount Lebanon had a controversial program then to hire sharpshooters from the agriculture department, state agriculture. They came in and they did it for 2 years. My reporting says the deer vehicle collisions were going down. A new crop of commissioners came in. They ended that program. Now, from 2008 until now, there's been no control. So a population in Mount Lebanon that was already high and was coming down, the program stopped. In 2 years, that population doubled. Then in 2 years, that population doubled. Then it doubled again.
There's no proof that it's doubled.
There is proof.
The aerial survey in 2013 shows 342 deer. The aerial survey in 2014 shows 193 deer. That is a 44% drop in the deer population. However, the commissioners have no regard for facts. There's a quote.
Wait a minute.
One at a time, please.
Stubborn things. These are the aerial surveys, the traffic accidents. Let me tell you about the traffic accidents.
Let me throw out a statistic that the Game Commission says, according to the 2014-2015 season, hunters harvested a decrease compared to the year before. Is this an indication that the deer population is decreasing? Is what Layla is pointing to, is that an indication that the deer population is decreasing? And if so, Do we still need to resort to what is happening in Mount Lebanon?
That's a statewide statistic. It was a bad year for hunting, yes. Bad weather.
Tom Facey, go ahead.
Yeah, the harvest numbers were just released a couple of days ago or earlier this week for this, and you're referring to the statewide harvest. The harvest in 2B actually went up slightly, I believe. It was a little over 17,000. And when I say 2B, I mean Wildlife Management Area Unit 2B, which encompasses just about all of Allegheny County and some parts of the surrounding counties. I don't have actual Allegheny County figures in front of me. But
And I have something from Mount Lebanon. In 2011, there were 23 deer car collisions in Mount Lebanon. In 2012, there were 49. In 2013, there were 43, and the list for 2014 is incomplete. They didn't do it during the rut in September, October, November, and December.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying there's a decrease in the number?
No, I'm saying the number went up. The number went up. In 2011, there were 23. 2012, 49. 2013, 43.
Okay, so you were working backwards before. Now you're going from 2011 forward to this year, or to the most recent statistics available, 2014.
Yes.
Okay.
Deer car collisions are increasing. They were decreasing slightly during the 2007-2008 program. The issue is stewardship. If you build a road, you would come back and you would retar that road. You'd put signage up, you know. I think people look outdoors and they see all the green stuff and they think it'll take care of itself. But communities, my reporting has shown, I've been covering this since 2007, you really have to provide stewardship of that which you've built. This is a community that has not. Other communities have. Fox Chapel has a really good program. They keep their deer population down through lethal means. Upper St. Clair.
Are they doing the same thing that Mount Lebanon is doing?
No, because they have a maintenance program that has kept it down. With no maintenance program, there are so many deer, according to local officials, so many negative deer human contacts, for whatever reason, that they've got to do something fairly drastic to get it down, and that's why the Game Commission took this step to approve such a large thing. Once it comes down, they say, then they'll use lethal and non-lethal means to try to maintain a population.
Layla, we need to go to break, but very quickly, Mount Lebanon was doing, you said that was in Fox Chapel?
Fox Chapel, Upper St. Clair, Allegheny County Parks all have programs.
Is what the other communities are doing, is that acceptable to someone like you?
A lethal means to control a fake deer, you know, overpopulation is absolutely not acceptable. There are many non-lethal proven methods that have been used. They're being used in New York. There's one in Maryland that they're doing sterilization. So, no, I don't agree with any lethal.
We'll take a break. We are talking about the deer call in Mount Lebanon. Obviously, as you've been hearing, very controversial. We'll take calls and to continue with our guests. This is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the controversial deer call in Mount Lebanon with a representative of Pittsburgh Animal Rights, Layla Slayman. Also with us is Tom Fazy, Information and Education Supervisor for the Pennsylvania Game Commission Southwest Region, and John Hayes, a reporter with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette who has been covering this issue. We'll take your calls at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Let's go to Linda in Mount Lebanon. Linda, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul, for having me on, and thank you to your guests. I am extremely frustrated by the lack of homework and clear lack of due diligence that our commissioners have taken over the past 4 years, and specifically over the past few months on this project. They have violated federal laws by allowing sites within 1,000 feet of a school. They have violated the PA state laws by not mandating the PA one call, and contractor was then scrambling to do that. And clearly, you know, by approving use of the Twin Hills Park site, which is not even located in Mount Lebanon, you know, these folks really don't have the homework done. There's poor inputs on this whole plan and poor outputs. But I have a specific question for Tom Fazy. Last night, there was discussion about the fact that there was two applications made to the PA Game Commission. The one for the culling was sent back and approved. The one for the sterilization was sent to Mount Lebanon with further questions. Are you saying that no matter if these questions are answered, that Mount Lebanon will not receive approval for the use of sterilization in our community based on what the information that you have right now?
If their application was for the contraception.
No, it was not. It was for sterilization.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that that's an impossibility. But it's very expensive. It requires actual surgery, and if Mount Lebanon can demonstrate that they can do that to our agency satisfaction, it's a possibility down the road. But that in and alone by itself isn't going to solve the issue for the municipality. Just like this calling effort isn't alone by itself going to solve the issue.
Well, what you're saying is that Mount Lebanon has basically picked two methods which are really outside the norm of neighboring communities.
No, lethal means
no,
is not outside the norm. Using the corral traps is a little bit new approach.
To Linda's point, Scott Township officials have questioned whether Mount Lebanon has a legal right to cull deer in the park. In fact, they've said that it is illegal. What about this?
My understanding is the park, I can't remember the name of the park, but the park portion where the corral was in the Scott Township portion of that park, that corral has been removed. That's my understanding. Every corral that's currently
Hills park.
Being used
Twin
is
Hills.
Within the borough or municipality of Mount Lebanon. So they're, as far as we're concerned, they're following the guidelines and conditions of the permit.
And to my information... The reason that was done was Twin Hills Park is in Scott, but Mount Lebanon had been involved in some way in maintenance of that park or something. That's why they included it. When Scott said don't do it, they said, you know, they dropped it from the program. And the call is going on now in Rob Hollow Park, Bird Park. It's called Hood Ridge Park, but it's the Connor Conservation District, the municipal golf course, and McNeely Park.
Let's go to Jen.
Can I back up one thing?
Sure, Tom.
The sterilization would be only approved by our agency after other steps have been taken, and a total integrated approach, including euthanasia, lawful hunting where it can be done, ban of feeding, the whole thing. It's not in and of itself can't solve the problem, nor would we approve it to be the only option for this community or any community.
Let's go to Jen in Mount Lebanon. Jen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You're on the air.
Great. I just want to point out first that I'm employed as a naturalist, so I have a pretty good idea about what's going on here. I live in Mount Lebanon. A lot of these deer that I see in our neighborhood are diseased, and it's because they're forced to compete for food with ever-growing numbers of deer. So honestly, to say that it's inhumane to not cull the herd is ridiculous. I mean, obviously somebody who doesn't believe in any killing of animals is never going to be happy about that. But, you know, there's really no other rational reason. I mean, to do surgery on this number of deer to, you know, have contraception is ridiculous. So what's the other solution? I mean, really.
Layla Slayman, what about what Jen is saying? Less humane to shoot deer in this manner as opposed to having them starve to death or be hit by automobiles?
You know what, Paul and Jen? It's not an either-or situation. We are smart people. We have statistics. The commissioners and surrounding communities all over the state with this issue can look at data collection that is clear-cut, the facts and what the facts show. I don't think Jen's an expert on what a diseased deer does and does not look like. Now, a really important point here that we have to know is something called a compensatory reproduction. So what happens when you kill off a lot of deer? She can say it's humane, not humane. What happens is there's a vacuum. So the deer compensate for that. And when the deer compensate for that, they start having twins and triplets. They start breeding and giving birth a lot sooner. There's a 38% rise in a population after a cull is done. And that's really important to note, is that nature balanced itself out. And even Mr. Fazy said that the cull not only is this is the first time it's going to be used ever, which is absolutely ridiculous to spend all this money, you know, making our community a testing ground here, but it's just not going to work. It's not the only method. They know that it's not going to work. It's just such a farce.
Daryl on Twitter.
Can I respond to that?
Go ahead, Tom. Tom, this is Tom Fazy with the Wildlife Commission.
Game
Commission.
The argument about the compensatory reproduction just doesn't hold water. They're already at a high reproductive rate in these urban areas. Fawns are breeding. You know, once they hit 80 ponds in their first fall, fawns are breeding. They're already having, you know, 79% of our deer in these areas are having twins already, and sometimes triplets. It's just not, it's not, it doesn't hold water in this situation. Maybe in some remote place where the deer numbers are already low and you take too many, then they'll have that. But it's just not a viable option anywhere in the eastern United States.
John Hayes, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I've talked with biologists all over the country about this. She was talking about how in a natural situation the deer would respond. This is not a natural situation. There's nothing natural in Mount Lebanon. There is nothing. None of those green spaces are natural. There should be 400-year-old trees in Mount Lebanon. There should be an entirely different landscape there. This is a landscape humans have created. There never is a vacuum of or a loss of food because people go back out and plant their backyards.
But Sambino asks on Twitter, if they're already corralled, the deer are already corralled, besides the cost, why can't they be relocated to a state forest?
I'll address that one.
Go ahead,
one.
Tom.
First of all, our primary goal is overall deer health or wildlife health and habitat health in Pennsylvania. So one of the biggest issues as an agency we face is disease issues. Predominantly when you're talking about deer, you're talking about chronic wasting disease. Every deer carries parasites, bacteria, et cetera, ticks. If they're carrying ticks that carry the Lyme disease pathogen and we remove those deer to another area and introduce that into that new area, then we've done a disservice to the public. 50% or more mortality occurs during trap and transfer, either during the transfer itself based on the high levels of stress involved, or within a year of release. These same deer that grew up their whole lives in this urban and suburban areas of the Commonwealth, if you try to remove them to a remote area, they're going to go straight to the first house they can find because that's all they've ever known. It's very labor and time intensive, and we won't authorize trap and transfer. It's not the responsible thing to do as a wildlife management agency.
Let's go to Meredith in Mount Lebanon. Meredith, you're on the air. We're getting very tight on time, so please be as expedient as you possibly can. Well, that's one way of doing it, I guess. Laura, is Laura on the line? Apparently we've lost both of our callers, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Hey, while we're finding somebody, can I point
yes.
out some of my reporting? Recently, the best study on non-lethal means for deer reduction was recently done at Cornell University. For 6 years, they tried non-lethal means. It's a 1,000-acre campus. Let's see. They used a variety of non-lethal means. The deer population didn't drop. They suspect that some of the does that had been sterilized or whatever were still attracting bucks.
Let's go to Laura on the. We do have Laura on the line. Laura, go ahead. You'll be our last caller to comment. Hi, Laura. Laura, are you there? And apparently, we do not have Laura. Daryl on Twitter asks, "Will the animal rights guest, that being Layla Slayman, be okay with the call if transparency issues are resolved?
We've already answered this question. There are proven non-lethal methods, and there's no reason that we need to resort to something so inhumane and using lethal methods when this really comes down to gardening. There are a few Mount Lebanon elite folks that don't want their tulips eaten. And the issues here is that they're not defensive gardening. They're not spraying their lawns. They're not using barriers. They refuse to plant things that are going to detract deer.
Is this more about and you know, you are the folks who have been attending the meetings. Is this more about the dangers of drivers running into deer, or is it about the nuisance of having deer in your garden? Because if that's the issue, then there are all sorts of animals you might have a cull with.
Exactly.
Well, not exactly. Deer impact the numbers of all those other animals. Deer eat their habitat. Deer eat the habitat. If the deer eats a shrub, that shrub never grows into a big tree that the deer, that birds will nest in. The deer eat the grass that the rabbits are in, and then the foxes don't eat the rabbits. This is a social issue, not really a deer management issue anymore. This is a social issue in Mount Lebanon.
Agreed. And you know what? Let me add in that a defensive driver is aware of all of their surroundings. Erie Insurance, who is Pennsylvania's largest insurance provider, reports a 5-time increase in vehicle accidents during hunting season. Why? Because they're scared and they run into the road.
No, it's not
true. I need to jump in and we do have Laura, our caller on the line, and let's take one last call. Laura, go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm Laura Simon. I'm a wildlife ecologist with the Humane Society of the U.S., and I just want to point out from a biological standpoint, this plan is not going to work because deer numbers are going to bounce back. However many they kill, which will not be very many, and they will be killed in a very brutal manner, this is why other sharpshooting companies will not use this method, is because it is so brutal and it's not efficient. But the problem is there is so much food in Mount Lebanon. I was out there this summer as part of a deer forum, and until people stop planting things that deer love and eliminate these over 40 floral gardens that have, you know, the most enticing flowers, which bring deer onto the roads, you're going to keep having deer. Their numbers are going to bounce back. I assure you of that.
And, Laura, we're going to have to call it there. We are out of time, but I want to thank all of our guests for taking part. John Hayes of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Tom Fazy, who is Information and Education Supervisor for the Pennsylvania Game Commission Southwest Region. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks again to John Hayes of the Post-Gazette and Layla Slayman, animal rights activist and a representative of Pittsburgh Animal Rights.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Coming up, we will talk with former U.S. Ambassador and Pittsburgh Post-Gazette columnist Dan Simpson about Hillary Clinton's addressing the email situation yesterday. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who has been criticized for her use of a personal email account while in office, addressed reporters at the UN yesterday. She says she complied with all State Department regulations.
I fully complied with every rule that I was governed by. I thought it would be easier to carry just one device for my work and for my personal emails instead of two. Looking back, it would have been better for me to use two separate phones and two email accounts. Emails about planning Chelsea's wedding or my mother's funeral arrangements, condolence notes to friends, as well as yoga routines, family vacations. The server contains personal communications from my husband and me. I believe I have met all of my responsibilities, and the server will remain private.
The assertion that she met all obligations to release her correspondence has not satisfied Hillary Clinton's critics. I'm joined now by former U.S. Ambassador Dan Simpson, now a columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He has written a column about this very issue today called The End of Hillary? Dan Simpson, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice to be here.
Some say she detoxed the situation a little bit yesterday. Did she?
I don't think so, no. Really. I mean, how do we know whether she released the relevant documents or not? She's the one who decided which ones she handed over to the State Department and which ones she deleted. So it raises the eternal question about the Clintons. What are they telling us and what are they hiding from us? And why?
What did you think about the staging of the news conference yesterday? Some said that she could have simply consented to do an interview with somebody like Diane Sawyer or Scott Pelley and let them fire away with whatever questions they had. She chose to face a news conference of reporters yesterday at the UN, where she was speaking about another issue entirely.
The venue was questionable, and particularly since it did detract from the whatever speech she was making about the situation of women and girls in the world. On the other hand, I do favor the open press conference, because too often individual questioners throw her softballs, throw anybody softballs. And in fact, people like Hillary Clinton choose a journalist to question them who will be sympathetic rather than really throw the sharp curveballs under the chin.
Hillary says she complied with every rule, all the federal records laws and policies. She says that this is something the law allowed her to do. What are the rules, Dan? You've worked in this arena. What are the rules? Did she follow them?
No, she did not. And also, she, in a sense, insulted our intelligence, because I don't know anyone virtually who doesn't have both an official email account and a personal email account. And her idea that it was – her suggestion that it was easier to just carry one piece of equipment around is silly, because everybody knows that you can shift from one to the other with a flick of the thumb. So that doesn't wash.
You worked in the diplomatic corps.
Yes.
So how does the process work? What do they tell you you're supposed to do? What would she have been told to do?
You're supposed to work on the record. And there are two reasons for that. I mean, the first one is security, which is to say, in her case, an official work with an official email account.
So that there's a record?
There are two record reasons for it. One of them is so that there is a record. The second one is the security issue. I mean, today is, it's like Mount Lebanon in terms of hackers. Everybody, the Chinese, the Russians, the Israelis, everyone hacks everyone else's account.
She said that it wasn't hacked, though.
Would you be prepared to believe that some sort of setup in Chappaqua, New York, would have more effective security than the Department of State?
I would probably not be inclined to believe that.
No, I wouldn't either.
But isn't there the chance that she's telling the truth, that it wasn't hacked?
Oh, that's possible. But that doesn't mean the question of access to what she has done as Secretary of State. And that's not just
– She made herself vulnerable.
Yeah, it's not just prurient curiosity on – I mean, Americans have a right to know what their government is doing in their name. And also, if you want to get deeper into it, there's history, and what did the Secretary of State in, 2012 tell the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia that we would do or not do? I mean, that should be retrievable. And when she has it all squirreled away in Chappaqua, in a server in Chappaqua, New York, and she decides what she tells the State Department and what she does not, we don't have that kind of accountability.
We're talking with former U.S. Ambassador Dan Simpson, now a columnist with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette here on Essential Pittsburgh. Should someone have been advising her here? I mean, I'm guessing somebody was, but, shouldn't somebody have stepped in who was aware of this and said, Madam Secretary, you have got to go about this differently?
Yeah, I gamed that out in my column. I mean, someone should have said, Madam Secretary, you're not playing by the rules. And here are the reasons for the rules: security and accountability. And also, it's not to your advantage to expose yourself down the road to the kind of attack that you're eventually going to experience. And then there's one more line, and that is, that the media might find out about it. And then if you were the senior State Department person telling her that, you have to be prepared to drop the dime on her. If she continues to do it the wrong way, then you rat her out. And nobody did that. And I don't know why they didn't. And unless they did, and the compliant media didn't print it. That's possible, too.
Do you think that she should turn over her server to an independent third-party arbiter? She has said that she will not.
Well, that's one way to that would be one way to deal with it, although if she is, what should we say, permanently deleted, which can occur, if she has done that, why, we'll never get it. We'll never know. And, I mean, you know, I don't care about her mother's funeral or Chelsea's wedding, but how do we know what she said to Angela Merkel or Xi Jinping?
Well,
or
the NSA probably knows.
Well, they might. Yeah, that might be the full comprehensive record of the whole thing.
We talked with the head of the NSA about they're listening into those conversations, yeah. To phone conversations of Angela Merkel. So there may be something there. But more to the point, there was an interesting comment by former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell. He was on MSNBC, and he said that Ms. Clinton complied with all the regulations that, his point that he went on to make was infrastructure is falling apart, and we're talking about emails. This is much ado about nothing. And he says that what she's probably not wanting people to see is some comment she made about what an idiot, maybe a comment to former President Clinton, her husband, Bill Clinton, about Senator so-and-so being an idiot or whatever it might be.
This could be it, but there's another one that's not quite such an attractive thing that the Clintons might want to cover up, and that's the other story out there about who exactly or which countries exactly have given money to the Clinton Foundation. And that turns out to have been Saudi Arabia, Oman, who knows which countries, and also
people with whom this country has philosophical differences.
Yeah, also we have to go on their word for who has given the money. And are you ready to do that? I'm not ready to do that. And then we'll come to the point, if she does proceed with her candidacy, how do we differentiate between Clinton Foundation money and other campaign money? How are we supposed to figure that out? And, of course, it is the case that foreign country money is not supposed to be in our elections.
Let's take a call quickly from Bob in Scott Township. Bob, we're down to less than a minute here, but you have a point you wanted to make.
Yes. This seems to me like it's another witch hunt against the Clintons that have gone on for years. I can't see how this overshadows a situation we have when 47 senators send a letter to one of our supposedly evil empire enemies trying to negate peace talks. I don't understand this.
Bob is saying,
where is the media going?
Yeah. Bob is saying this isn't important as the letter signed by the Republicans to Iran. Thank you, Bob. What about that?
Well, I don't like that either. I mean, they undercut the position of John Kerry, the Secretary of State, who's trying his best to negotiate the best agreement that he possibly can. Also, if you are our partner in those negotiations, which is to say France, the United Kingdom, Germany, China, and Russia, you'd have to think that the United States as a negotiating partner is absolutely out of its mind.
We're just about out of time. I'm going to ask you the question that you ask in your column. Is this the end for Hillary Clinton as in terms of her presidential aspirations?
I don't think so, although I think it calls into severe question both her judgment and her integrity. Now, it may be that the American population just consider this type of behavior to be normal and would go ahead and vote for her anyway.
Well, they very well might. Former U.S. Ambassador Dan Simpson, now a Post-Gazette columnist, thank you for being here. I'm Paul Guggenheimer.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.